This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Tom Cook is a legendary animator that has worked on various cartoons that, guess what, we all know and love. Smurfs, Flintstones, Scooby-Doo, He-Man, She-Ra, and that's just to name a few. So Tom is going to join me today to speak about his career, what animation is like today, and any upcoming projects he may have. Thanks for joining me, Tom.
Hey, no problem.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you become an animator?
Well, it started back in 1978. I was actually a transit bus driver in Los Angeles for the RTD, which was our bus lines there. And through a series of weird things, I ended up taking a class in a college on comic book art. And in that class, the teacher worked at Hanna-Barbera as a storyboard artist. So he had us bring our portfolios in, and he liked my work, and he asked me after one of the classes if I would be interested in a program that they had at Hanna-Barbera in a class that you learn basic animation. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it. And it was like, well, yeah, of course I'd be interested in that. So he recommended me to the class, and I ended up being in the class for about 3 or 4 weeks. There were about 35 people in the class. And after the third week, they decided they were going to hire four of us, and I was one of the lucky ones to get hired. So I really went from bus driver to animator in 3 weeks with, like, no experience whatsoever.
That is incredible and really exciting. What was one of the first projects you worked on?
Well, the very first thing, they actually hired me to work on Challenge of the Super Friends, which is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and all those. And the reason they hired me for that was because the artwork that I had showed the teacher was all superhero stuff. And they had told me that they had a lot of animators that were really good at drawing, like Fred and Barney and Scooby-Doo. They didn't have that many that could really draw good human figures. And they said that's what they were looking for, so that's why they hired me. And, of course, I ended up drawing my very first scenes were of Fred Flintstone in the Flintstones. So it was one of those little ironic things where I'm hired for one thing and I end up drawing exactly what they told me that they didn't need me for. But so at the same time, Hanna-Barbera was so big that we were working on Scooby-Doo, the new Fred and Barney show, that's the Flintstone show that was on at the time, Challenge of the Super Friends, and a couple other things. And you just basically worked on whatever came next. So if you happened to go in on a Wednesday and they had just given out the last of the Super Friends show, you'd get the whatever the next episode was of Fred and Barney or Scooby-Doo. And so that's kind of how I started out working on Fred, which brought me back to the days when I was a little kid when the Flintstones were on TV. I used to sit there with a pad of paper and I would draw Fred. Every time he'd turn his head a certain way, I'd draw as much as I could get down, and then I'd wait for him to turn that way again. And then, so it's just kind of cool that one of the first things I learned to draw as a kid, I ended up doing as my very first scene I ever worked on. And I actually have that same drawing that I did, that very first drawing. They put it on a cell for me and painted it. So I've got the very first drawing I ever did in the business up on my studio wall here.
So it's almost like it came full circle, huh?
Yeah, that's why I, you know, always tell people it's like I was just so fortunate in the way things worked out. Because if I had not seen that college pamphlet that I saw that comic book class in, I never would have even gone in the class, and I probably would still be a bus driver. So just the coincidences were just like amazing. And, you know, to end up doing something that I never even thought that I could ever get into was just beyond amazing.
Now, are you working on any cartoon right now? Like, are you still in the business?
Yeah, this is one of the number one questions I get. Well, I'm 66, so I'm retired, but back in 1982, Hanna-Barbera took all of the animation work and sent it over to Korea and Japan. So I really would have been out of a job in 1982, except for the fact that Filmation Studios, which is run by a guy named Lou Scheimer, he had said that he would never send work overseas. He wanted to keep the work in America, unlike every other studio outside of Disney. And so all the work of all these smaller studios, they all send it over to Korea and Japan. And luckily for me, Filmation, you know, kept the work here. And that's when I got to work on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which is, you know, probably the biggest thing I've ever worked on.
Now, 80s cartoons, how long did it take to finish one episode?
Well, we had to do, with He-Man, we had to do an episode a week. But it wasn't like, there were many different departments. In fact, at the Wizard World show in Chicago, I'm going to be doing a panel, and it's going to kind of explain the process, you know, from script to screen. It probably took about 2 or 3 months to get an entire episode done, from it being written to drawn to painted to camera, you know, shot on camera. But our job, the animation part of it, moving the characters, our department had 1 week to get the entire episode done. So we had about 50 or 60 animators, and then also 50 or 60 assistant animators. So there were probably about 100 plus people working on each episode. Because it's 12 drawings per second if you're animating full animation. So that's, you know, that's maybe a day's work might be a second and a half.
Wow.
So that, you know, we had to get these things done in a week. So we were working pretty hard.
Now, I did look up some of the stuff that you've done, and I noticed that you jumped from being an animator to a timing director. Why did you do that?
Well, I basically left Los Angeles in 1990 and moved up to Seattle. And the company I worked for sent me work through FedEx. So they told me I could, you know, still keep working, but just work up in Seattle, because FedEx had really proven themselves as being dependable. And you really can't be an animator if you're going to work out of the state, because an animator, you have to draw everything, all the key poses, and then have somebody video it, show the directors, and if they don't like it, then you have to fix it. And it's too much. I couldn't send work back and forth, you know, and it's too long of a process to do it if I'm not in the studio. And I happened to know a friend of mine that was living up in Seattle as well, and he was into timing direction, and he asked if I wanted to help him out with the stuff that he was doing, and then I ended up, you know, working for Sony TriStar and a couple other places, strictly as a timing director. And you really have to know how to be an animator to be able to be a director, because you have to know, I'm basically timing out every scene in the episode. And if you don't know how long things take to do, like walking, you know, you've got a 12-frame walk cycle. Well, if you don't know that, you can't really direct it correctly. So that was just kind of a natural move into that direction.
Now, is animation, like when you started in the 80s, I'm sure the way you made cartoons are a lot different from probably like late 90s. Do you think that technology has changed animation for the better?
Well, in the old days, what we used to use is this really rare item called a pencil. And they don't use pencils anymore. It's all done on maybe on a tablet, you know, with a hooked up to a computer. Or sometimes they will draw things and scan them into the scanner. I haven't really been into the ways they do 2D anymore, because it's mainly all gone 3D now. So it's all computer 3D animation, like all the Disney and DreamWorks and Pixar movies. But I did learn how to do that when I was when I was living in Seattle. I got hired by Microsoft, and they had just come out with the very first program to be able to do 3D computer animation. And so Microsoft sent me down to L.A. to learn how to do that program. So I knew how to, you know, animate in a computer. And, I mean, it was completely different because when I was working, I mean, you had to be able to draw. Now you don't have to be able to draw anymore. You just basically, someone else creates the character for you, and you just move it. So it's kind of opened up the door for people that don't have the ability to draw to become an animator. But at the same time, it's taken a lot of us old guys that can really draw well. It's not a big thing anymore. Nobody cares. So it's kind of taken that away from some of my good buddies that really struggled the last few years before they could retire because there just wasn't any work using a pencil anymore.
What about cartoons that are on Cartoon Network or, you know, Disney? I mean, aren't those still traditionally done?
Yeah, those are done. They use different programs like maybe Flash. I used Flash. This was back probably around 2000. I was working for a company that was doing little cartoons on the Internet. It was the first time they had done cartoons on the Internet because you had to have computers that were fast enough and had enough memory to be able to play an animation. And it took until, you know, early 2000s before they could really do that without any problem. And we still did it. The Flash program is still kind of like you make a head, you make an arm, you make a hand, and it's kind of like paper cut animation where you just place the head where you want, and instead of really drawing the head over, you just kind of move the head a little bit. You can bob it up and down when he's talking. If he lifts his arm up, it's like three different pieces. You've got his forearm, his shoulder area, and his hand, and you can just rotate the pieces any way you want to make it look like it's animated, but you're not really, you know, animating it the old school way. No. And that's why a lot of the cartoons you see on TV, they're not very well animated at all. They're moving. They're not animated.
It's funny you said that because I wanted to talk about a cartoon called Steven's Universe, and it's always bothered me with this show because the characters are sometimes different heights. The same character. One character will be really tall, and then in the next scene, they're the same height as the shortest character. Do you think with technology that the labor of love has been lost?
You know, I don't know. I think you can still do the shows of today and still have a labor of love. But I don't see any cartoons that are the way that I did them, where it was like action-adventure cartoons. Like He-Man or Thundar the Barbarian or even Super Friends. You know, it was villains versus the good guys. Nowadays, it seems like everything is kind of like SpongeBob or just kind of crazy cartoons, and the jokes are kind of really childish jokes rather than a good storyline, and that's kind of what I miss. That's why I enjoyed working on things like He-Man and Thundar, because they really had good storylines to them. And nowadays, it's just kind of silliness, and I mean, there's a place for that, too, but it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of really adventure shows for kids that enjoy that type of show.
You know, as an animator, did you ever have like a say when it came to the storylines, or you just did as you told?
Yeah, no. Every department has its thing, and I mean, you've got, you know, the person who writes the script, and then the person who does the storyboard for it, and then this person that lays it out, and my job was to animate it. So really, by the time it came to me, you know, it was all locked down as far as what was going to happen in the episode and all that. I mean, they do the voice tracks before you draw anything, because you have to know what the character's saying to be able to have his mouth move, and also you have to know what he's saying so that you can animate him, so he's doing whatever. You know, if he's saying, look over there, I have to know that he's saying that so I can have him point, you know, over to wherever there is. So, each department had their own thing, and like I said, we were on such a strict schedule that, you really couldn't deviate from that.
Now, have you ever gone through your resume and said, man, I should have done this a little bit differently, or is everything up to par?
No, I really am really glad with the career that I've had. I mean, it's been terrific. There's a few things that I would have loved to have worked on that I didn't get a chance to. One of them being Pinky and the Brain. I thought Pinky and the Brain was one of the really good cartoons back in the, I guess it was in the 90s. And I was directing another show called Road Rovers, which wasn't very popular, but it was a pretty clever little show. And I actually contacted Warner Brothers and said, boy, I'd love to work on Pinky and the Brain. And they said, yeah, we just don't want to send that out of the studio. So, you know, me being in Seattle, that was the problem, is they didn't want to send it up to me. Because it was such a, you know, popular show that they wanted to make sure that it didn't get lost in the mail for sure. And I would have loved to have been able to stay down in L.A., but I just really stopped really enjoying living in L.A. And all my buddies, after I left, ended up working at Disney and working on, like, Beauty and the Beast and Tarzan and Hercules and Aladdin and all these great movies. I would have loved to have done that, but the payoff was I just didn't want to live in Los Angeles. And I, like I said, I was lucky enough to get this job at Microsoft, and that really opened up a whole new world of me learning how to animate in a computer and stuff, and I ended up doing video games and training people how to animate in a computer, which was rewarding in its own way. It's kind of like if you're an animator, it's a wonderful job. Gosh, I loved it. But, boy, it's a hard job. You know, drawing every single day and making everything. So moving up to directing or anything else was just a little bit of a relief from having to work quite as hard. You know, I was working my butt off when I was doing animation. And as a director, you know, I can direct the animator to do all sorts of stuff that I wouldn't want to draw because it'd be so complicated. But then it's up to them to draw it. So that became a little bit more of a fun thing for me to do, and to be able to, you know, slow down a little bit, because as an animator, I couldn't get married. I mean, I was so busy. I really couldn't have had a family. And when I finally moved up to Seattle, that's when I ended up getting married and having a few kids, and then directing. You know, I could just sit there at the kitchen table and just do it while they're watching TV, or, you know. So that was a little bit bit of a relief for me.
Now, you said that as an animator, you draw every day. Did you ever feel like you were stifled creatively? That, you know, oh, I wanted to do something entirely different, but the director said, stick it this way.
That's kind of the ticket. You know, you go in, the director would give you, like, you know, 15 or 20 scenes from that episode. And normally what the director would try to do, because you had to meet 80 feet a week. We had to do 80 feet worth of animation per week. So in doing that, he had to give you some scenes that were kind of easy to do, and then if you got a more difficult scene that could take you longer, that way it would balance out and you could get that 80 feet. So you would get some scenes that were super easy and really not that rewarding as far as, you know, having fun doing it. But you got those few hard scenes that were really cool, difficult scenes that you really had to work at. And that kind of made up for the ones that weren't quite as... But you wanted those ones that weren't quite as difficult because you had to have that 80 feet per week. So, you know, again, I don't have many complaints. I know a lot of people that I worked with didn't even care that they were animators. They just... That was their job. And for me, I loved it. You know, it was hard work, but really rewarding when you'd see it on the screen, and then at the end when you'd see your name in the credits and all that. And, you know, being able to do some scenes, and then when they looked at them in dailies, because every day they would play what was ever filmed on the camera the day before for some of the people, plus the heads of the studio. And if Lou Scheimer saw something that he liked, he would say, hey, who did this one? And every now and then they go, oh, Tom Cook did that one. And then, you know, you kind of, thank you very much. So that was very rewarding.
Now, back in the 80s, a lot of times cartoons were used as a promotional tool, or it was a way to revitalize old toys like G.I. Joe. So do you think that toys are still a driving force behind the creation of cartoons?
Well, He-Man was really the first toy that came before the cartoon. You know, normally you'd have the cartoon, and then they'd make toys of the cartoon. In this case, Mattel came to Filmation and said, look, we've got all these toys, and we'd love to do a TV series. So it's kind of the first one that was that way. And I really didn't mind either way. I mean, it seemed like when I was a kid, one of the difficulties for me was that there weren't many cool toys. They didn't really do toys like they do today. And when I was a kid, I would have given anything to have a T-shirt with a picture of my favorite characters on it. They really weren't available. You know, it wasn't until I was about 12 that the Marvel Comics finally came out with a Spider-Man T-shirt. And it seems weird that you wouldn't have had them at the local stores, but they just didn't do that back then. So nowadays, boy, I mean, you can't go into a store without seeing just hundreds and hundreds of really cool toys that have to do with the cartoons and, you know, clothing you could wear and, you know, beach towels, bedspreads. I mean, it's just, it's a whole new world out there. And I would have loved it if it was like that when I was a kid.
For all those people out there who want to go into animation, what do you have to say to them?
It's another one of the big questions I always get. I say to them, go to law school because there are no jobs in animation. You know, if there's very little available 2D-wise. Probably in Chicago and New York and some of the bigger cities, there's probably a little animation studio in that city that does local, you know, local commercials and stuff like that. So you might be able to get into something like that. But the only thing you can do is, you know, move to Los Angeles and try to get picked up by DreamWorks or Disney or any of the studios that are working there. But if you want to be an animator for TV stuff, if it's anything that's hand-drawn, you got to move to the Philippines or, you know, they're even doing it in Vietnam and Taiwan. I mean, it's spread out all over the place. Or if you are into doing layouts or storyboards, a lot of that stuff is still done here in the U.S. And there are still some studios that do, like what Cartoon Network has a studio, and they do all the pre-production work here in the U.S., but then all the production work is done overseas. And, you know, I say this as that's the way it's been. I don't know if it's changed in the last 5 or 6 years. I'm really not into it that much anymore. But, like I said, I couldn't get married till I was almost 40 years old because it was just, you were either making a lot of money or you were laid off and not much in the middle. So it was really difficult if you wanted to buy a house because unless you were able to save enough money to be able to pay your house payment when you were laid off and searching for work, it would have been really difficult. And so if you want a normal family life and get married in your mid-20s and having a few kids, man, I just wouldn't do it. You know, I wouldn't do it again.
Really?
Yeah, it's, you know, I have a really great family. I've been married for almost 30 years now, and that's been the best part of my life, is being married with my kids and growing up with my kids, and it's just something that I didn't want to give up. It was almost good that the work went overseas for me because it made me grow from being an animator and kind of moving up the ladder. Because if I stayed an animator, I'll tell you, it was really, I mean, you had to, when you were laid off, you're constantly calling studios, asking if they have any work. And, you know, every now and then you luck out. There was an old video by Paula Abdul. I think it was called,
is that the one with the cat?
yeah, with MC's
cat. I love that music video. I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. And what was it called? Opposites Attract, I think.
I think you're right.
And, and I was out looking for work and called this guy up, and he said, yeah, we've got some work. We've got this video we're doing. So I said, okay. And I went and picked it up, and it was an MC Scat Cat. So it was cool to work on stuff like that, but still, it was just a little blip. You know, that was like maybe 3 weeks' work, and then I'm unemployed again. And it was just a really difficult life to constantly be looking for work. And it wasn't really until He-Man and Filmation Studios that there were so many... Okay, the normal episodes for a series is like 13 episodes for a season. So if you did Scooby-Doo, it would be 13 episodes, and they would play those three times during the year because it was on Saturday mornings. And that would take care of your year's worth of Scooby-Doo. Well, with He-Man, it was syndicated. It was the very first syndicated TV series. So instead of selling it to the main channels, we just did the show and sold it to all the Channel 11s and Channel 13s around the United States. And it was 65 episodes a year because it was on Monday through Friday. So from that point on, I was never laid off again during that time I worked at Filmation. It was about for 8 years. And that was great from the aspect of never having to look for work again. But it's still, that's when the work really was the most difficult because I didn't have any break. You know, it was always nice to get laid off for a few weeks so you could have some rest. But, you know, being laid off for 3 months was a little much. And this way we just worked constantly for the next 6-7 years.
Why was it that animation studios started sending stuff overseas? I mean, why not keep it in-house?
It's the cost.
That was it, plain and simple, huh?
Well, we were unionized. It was a Motion Picture Screen Cartoonist Guild number 839. And like every other, you know, I hate to be kind of anti-union, but like every other union, they ask for so much that the studios can't afford it. And in this case, they could just turn around and send the work overseas pretty easily. Now, I worked, before I was a bus driver, I worked at General Motors on the assembly line. I was welding cars together. And same thing happened. The United Auto Workers wanted so much money, plus pension plans and health plans and everything else, that they said, forget it, and they closed the plant and moved it to Canada. Because Canada said, look, we won't charge you that much. We were making really good money. It's like I didn't need a raise. I needed to be sure that I have a job. And in animation, I was the one arguing that, no, let's try to get those months that were laid off, let's get rid of those, and let that be our raise. Let us work year-round rather than asking for, I don't remember what we were making back then, I think it was like $16 an hour or something. This is back in the late 70s, which was really good money for back then. And, you know, they wanted like $30 an hour, and there's no way they could afford that. You know, they were making a profit, but it wasn't like they were just, you know, raking in the cash and everybody's becoming a multimillionaire. And they just couldn't possibly afford $30 an hour. And my argument was, who cares if we get $30 an hour if we work 0 hours? You know, I'd much rather get 17 and work 40 hours. And, you know, so that's why. It's always about the money and the benefits that you get. You know, you work for these places that give you good benefits, but they've got to pay for them. And if the company isn't profitable, they can't pay for them. And then they either have to close the business or they have to move it somewhere else. And that's what's been happening with lots of different businesses. And I think it's finally turning around a little bit, and we're starting to bring some of these things back, which is really good.
Do you think that traditional animation, hand-drawn, will that ever come back, or is that gone?
You know, I think it's gone because nobody knows how to do it anymore. When I give my panel, everybody comes up at the end and go, man, I had no idea how a cartoon was made back then. And us, you know, us animators, I was like 25 years old when I started. And I was working with people that were in their 50s and 60s that had worked at Disney on, you know, all those Cinderella and Peter Pan and all that stuff. So they're all passed away. And I was the young guy, and now I'm 66. So I just don't know if there are that many people or enough people that know how to do it anymore to be able to really pull off opening up a new studio and doing it the old way. The companies that used to make the paint, to paint the cells, they're out of business because as soon as they started doing computer animation, you didn't need paint anymore. And the paint was one of the most expensive things of the whole show, is the ink and paint department having to paint every single cell. That was the most expensive part of the budget. And so there's nobody to do that anymore. I imagine you could rebuild it up, but boy, it sure would be expensive to do that.
Yeah, especially if you are going to do it in the USA.
Yeah. And especially if they're looking at these cartoons that are on TV now and they're still selling and they're still putting them on the air, there's no need to spend triple the money to make it look a little better.
That's true, but there's something about, I don't know, when you look at old animation from, you know, Disney's back in the 50s then to now, and it does have a different type of flavor to it that is unique.
Yeah.
I think Lion King too. I mean, there's a lot of it that it's beautiful artwork. And they use different techniques. Sometimes, I mean, they didn't have the technology that we have now. And it's a shame to see it's gone, but it would be nice if it came back.
Yeah, well, I always thought early on when this whole computer thing started, I thought, okay, I can deal with 3D animation. I don't think it looks as nice. I think the characters, if you've noticed, if you see DreamWorks or if you see Pixar or see Disney movie, it's hard to tell who did it because the characters all kind of look the same.
Yeah.
You know, there's the limit to what you can make is in 3D that's that much different. Whereas if you look at Peter Pan and then Sleeping Beauty, which was a completely different design, and then 101 Dalmatians, which was very cartoony, and then Lion King, that was very realistic. I don't know how you could do Lion King in a computer and make it look as good as it did.
Absolutely.
Because the characters just look, they look like a plastic character to me. Everything's got shiny spots on it, and it's like, you know, I don't know, I don't shine everywhere, you know, if I'm walking around, but everything seems to be super shiny. And that's why I think Toy Story worked so well, because they're toys made of plastic. And boy, did 3D fit that. It was perfect. But any of the characters that are supposed to be human, they just don't look very good, in my opinion.
Now, is there anything, like, after you retired from cartoons, you're not doing them anymore, but have you ever gone, looked on TV and said, man, this cartoon, this one's all right?
Well, you know, not too many, to be truthful. I will admit, because I have some grandkids and they watch SpongeBob, and while it's about as stupid as can be, it's pretty clever. and I did, you know, I did direct episodes of King of the Hill, and I directed an episode of The Simpsons. So I directed a few things that aren't that old. And I thought, while King of the Hill, the animation was not very good in it, same thing with The Simpsons, I thought the storylines were really funny and it was really well done. And that's something that, if it was well written like that, I could get into doing that again. You know, I had done some things back in the early 90s that were called Happily Ever After Fairy Tales. They were on HBO. And I directed about 5 or 6 episodes, and they were different takes on the fairy tales. So you would have, like, say, Pinocchio. But the Pinocchio, the puppet, was a little black puppet that was voiced by Will Smith. And instead of having the blue fairy, the beautiful blonde woman coming down with the magic wand, it was the blues fairy, which was this big guy with a saxophone, and all the music was blues music. So it was different takes on those old fairy tales. And it was a lot of fun, and it was Robert Guillaume who was I guess he came up with the idea of doing that and was the narrator. And Robert Guillaume was Rafiki in Lion King, and was also in the show Benson, where he was the butler. So that sort of stuff, you know, I'm not too old to not want to dab into something like that. Like I said, I don't think I'd want to animate again because it's just too much work. But to direct things isn't that hard, and to have your hand in it and be able to make some of the decisions, because it's really they're animating what I ask them to animate. And that was kind of fun. So that's the one thing I could still see myself doing.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, actually, I have a Facebook page that's Tom Cook, Classic TV Animator, and usually if you put that in, I pop up. That's the main thing where I keep in contact with my fans. I have an IMDb page, but that's basically just look up, you know, the things I've worked on. I also have a email address, which is 80sanimator@gmail.com. So it's 80sanimator@gmail.com. If somebody wants to, you know, order a drawing of He-Man or something like that, I do that still. And basically, I'm doing a lot of the Wizard World shows, which, of course, Chicago is a Wizard World show. And Wizard World, I've been doing them for about 3 or 4 years now, and some people say it's like a cookie-cutter convention, but it's really not. It's really, these people have done so many conventions that a lot of the problems that newer conventions run into, they have to wait a year to fix it, because it's usually a once-a-year thing. With Wizard World, they're doing, you know, 20 a year, or maybe even more. And so they've really ironed out a lot of the problems that pop up at conventions, and they always have great guests, and it's just a really, really good show. And the Chicago one is 4 days instead of just three. Usually it's just a 3-day show, but Chicago's big enough. In fact, this weekend I'm going to Mexico City for a toy convention, and it's going to be the first toy convention I've done. And of course, with He-Man being the big toy, I'm excited to go down there and see what they're interested in. But that's about it. The Facebook page is the best place probably to keep up.
Just to remind everybody listening, Tom Cook is going to be at the Wizard World Comic Convention in Chicago from August 22nd to August 26th. If you want to see any other actor or artist, make sure you go to wizardworld.com. There they have all the information of who's going to be at the convention.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.